Hey everybody, welcome back to Frost Christman. We are on our third episode. Last week we kind of, you know, broke our mission statement just to give you a kind of sampler platter of our tastes and our distastes. Many bombs were thrown. And this week we're actually back sort of on theme, and we decided to do an episode on the Olympics. So I am here again with my co-host, Matt Christman, a.k.a. Kushbaum.
Hi, everybody.
And we talked about this earlier, but I think it's worth mentioning because our listeners might be, like, really shocked to find out that neither of us were jocks growing up. I mean,
I feel comfortable finally admitting that.
Yeah, we have such a sporty vibe about us. I like did ballet, which is like when you want to work really hard but still be very unpopular. I believe lettered in.
I got in junior high. I got a letter in drama.
Yeah.
That I tried to hide from my father because I was worried he'd think I was gay. And I did, before that, I had a very, very unillustrious sporting career. I really did try because my dad liked sports and I was like, I wanted to, you know, make him happy. So I tried to do a bunch of stuff in elementary school and they all failed miserably. I was on a terrible softball team that lost all the time. I was on a really bad basketball team that lost all the time. And then I briefly tried to be a wrestler, but in our first meet at our opponent's gymnasium at their school, I realized in my very first match, oh shit, I'm claustrophobic. And I had a panic attack right there on the mat, and I had to like waddle away and like suck up a bunch of water in the hallway while taking big gasps of air with my dad standing behind me, so... Yeah, not much of a sports adept. Yeah.
Does your dad know that you're not gay now?
Sadly, he passed away before he had a chance to ever find out for sure that I wasn't gay. So he probably went to his grave with at least like a 30% suspicion that I was.
Yeah.
And now I realize, hey, you know, that's okay. That's fine.
Yeah. These are the moments of life.
Indeed.
Despite that, I think we both like sports movies, even though sports culture is very foreign to us. At least I know that I do. Corny ones, yeah. So I suggested we start with like literally the most famous Olympics movie out there, and the most infamous 1936's Olympia, Leni Riefenstahl's documentary on the Summer Games in Berlin.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So it's a weird movie to watch for a number of reasons. One, because it's like inarguably like a groundbreaking film. Like it used these really innovative filming techniques and these, you know, extreme close-ups that, you know, had never been used before, and there's, like, weird, like, crane work and shots in the stands, and, it's a really influential film that also happens to be a piece of Nazi propaganda. It's, like, over 3 hours long, so I don't think I need to, you know, recommend that anyone who isn't sort of a nerd about this stuff watch it, but it is worth, I think, watching the intro, like, the first 10 minutes, because it's like, remarkably stylized. And basically it opens up on, like, ruins, you know, you see columns, and then that, like, gives way to, like, statuary, and then the statuary, like, suddenly moves, and you realize, like, that actually these are not, you know, ancient Greek marble statues, but just like physically perfect human beings. And then it migrates to sort of like this you know, imagined historic Olympic montage, lots of nudity, and then it transitions to the actual documentary, which is, you know, off and on sort of interesting. She does do some interesting things with slow-mo and gets, like, really good sort of shots of athletes in slow motion that otherwise would just look weird and awkward and, you know, graceless. But you'll notice she really, you know, takes her time with the slow-mo on the German athletes and the Polish athletes, and maybe doesn't do slow-mo for certain other athletes. One of the things we both noticed was, like, in terms of difference, like, the bodies are incredibly different of what we think of athletes being.
Yeah, like, it's really weird. I did not know that back then that guys would compete in serious track and field events while wearing dress slacks.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of these dudes, they look like Fred Mertz.
Yeah.
They look like the chubby neighbor on a sitcom. And they're, hurling discuses around.
Yeah, like, Carol O'Connor is going to win a gold medal for Finland and in his regular clothes, too.
Yeah, and this looks like he just walked onto the pitch, like, hey, what are you guys doing?
Yeah. And then other ones, like, look like they're starving. Like, some of the runners just look emaciated compared to you know, athletes now.
Yeah, not a lot of tone.
Yeah. They just, like, look very, like, you can see muscle, but it's only because they have no fat. And the way they play the sports are very different. Like, it's like they didn't know how to play sports yet. There was no, like, perfected, like, technique yet to, you know, like, something like the high jump or whatever. So everyone would do it a different way and would just, like, flail over the bar. And it looked like none of them are going to make it because they just look like, you know, a mess of limbs, of skinny, starving limbs. We hadn't figured out how to be athletes yet.
Exactly. What we see now in contemporary sporting events really is the culmination of, like, 100 years of experimentation where people have figured out, in every event, something as simple as running to something that's more mechanically difficult, like pole vaulting. Like the Fosbury flop, for example, that you see every athlete do in pole vaulting, that wasn't invented until the 60s. So before that, people were just basically trying everything. And the 4-minute mile wasn't run until the 50s. And, like, you'd think how fucking hard is it to run? But apparently it takes a lot of experimentation to figure out exactly how to do those things most efficiently. And we're seeing that now. Like, we watch the Olympics and we're watching this perfect distillation of 100 years of sporting experimentation, whereas in the 36 games it's just people randomly flailing around and hoping they don't kill themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's insane how much precision now goes into it. And not just with, like, you know, with, like, body types, but, like, with training and with dieting and probably with drugs. And just all a matter of regimentation and, like, just... I mean, like, there's the overwhelming kind of, like, Nazi tones of the movie come from a few things. One, you see Hitler all the time, which is like...
A lot of Hitler.
It's just like a lot of shots of like an antsy, jittery Hitler who's probably on all kinds of speed.
Oh yeah, he was totally rolling for all of that.
Yeah. And it's super strange too because like yeah, okay, like, you know, Berlin's hosting the games, but I can't think of any other Olympics, at least like in my lifetime, where they just keep cutting to, you know, the head of state. Like, it's very weird. It's a distractingly Hitler heavy movie. Like,
I mean, you kind of expect a bit of Hitler when you're watching a movie about the 36 Olympics, but yeah, there's a lot of Hitler. And just the fact that he's in that uniform, you know, we're just really not used to seeing the guys in the stands kitted out in military ensembles like that with the hats and shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even, yeah, like, badass Gehring, I think, is in the stands, too. But, you know, everything was wrapped in that. I mean, even Riefenstahl, who somehow managed to avoid being imprisoned because she claimed, oh, I'm just an artist, I'm misunderstood. Like, there are photos of her wearing a uniform. And, like, she also saw people, like, mass executed and, you know, like, just kind of kept going and ignored it or whatever. But, like, everything has a bit of a Nazi sheen to it. The actual announcements on it aren't, I mean, they wouldn't be, obviously, like, people are trying to be, like, diplomatic, but there are moments where they'll, like, refer to, like, a hurdles jumper, Fritz Pollard, as Pollard the Black, and you're like, okay, that's not a nationality. but, it's kind of that the Olympics themselves are, like, kind of a little bit fascist anyway, because they're about, like, bodily perfection.
Yes, the triumph of the will, literally.
Yeah, they're inherently, you know, gender dichotomy. Remember the thing recently with the Caster Semenya, the South African runner who has some sort of genetic anomaly that makes her, like, intersex by some definitions, and people were, like, trying to maybe keep her out of the games, like...
Yes, yes.
Sort of creepy stuff. And then, you know, it's all very nationalist, which is, like, you know, nation is at least as arbitrary as race. So, I like the Olympics, but they got a touch of the fash on them.
Yeah. Well, and we're living in the shadow of the 36 games in a lot of ways. Like, things that we take for granted, a lot of them were invented by the 36 games, like the torch-bearing ceremony. They were the first ones to do that, and we've been carrying it on ever since.
Yeah. I mean, I think the intro is kind of interesting and worth watching. The only other thing that I think is, like, truly worth watching is, and again, I'm not a huge sports person, but Jesse Owens, like, this was the Olympics of Jesse Owens, and this was before they measured races in, like, thousandths of a second or whatever, because they didn't, you know, they didn't really have to, there was enough distance or whatever, but it's insane, he was just, like, multiple bodies ahead of everyone. And he was such a superior athlete to everyone he was competing against. And, like, the best thing, and you can find it on YouTube, and I totally recommend you look it up. He did the long jump, and it's, like, 2 minutes of film. But other people before him, you know, you jump and you try and land forward because your jump distance is determined by the closest... you know, mark you make in the sand to your jump point. So you don't want to fall backward because, you know, if you fall backwards on your hands are how far you jumped. So everyone would sort of just land and then, like, land on their feet and sort of, like, fall down into a crouch and try and jump forward. He, like, would, like, land and, like, spring up. And it's the most, it's just, like, I can't physically, like, it makes my knees hurt watching it. And it was this incredible moment, also because
impressive.
It was like a, and as a black athlete at an Olympics, when the announcer was literally referring to black athletes as the black, like, regardless of their nationality.
And the movie shows him doing a lot of. I mean, there's a lot of Germans getting owned in this movie for a movie that's supposed to be advertising for racial superiority. There's a lot of the Germans just getting their asses kicked at a lot of these events.
Yeah, they make a, like, decent showing here and there, but it's not, it's obviously not, like, the, you know, it would not be used to endorse them as the master race. It's not, this was, they would leave this off their resume.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's sort of, I think it's a milestone in the change in the way that white supremacy is conceived of, because now it's a commonplace of white supremacy that blacks are superior athletically, but inferior mentally. But earlier in the 20th century, white supremacy meant that, it meant white supremacy in athletics and in intellect and in everything. And so if you were to take your common, you know, basement Nazi who's like, well, yes, of course the blacks are good at those athletic events, but they don't have my superior mind. And you took them back and had them talk to one of these early generations of, like, modern white supremacists, they'd say, what's wrong with you? Why don't you have faith in the white race to conquer with their bodies and minds?
Yeah.
It just shows how arbitrary and ever-shifting it is as a concept.
Yeah, well, it has to. I mean, like, say what you will about, like, the bullshit of liberal multiculturalism, it at least forces, at least keeps racism on its toes.
Yeah, it's, gotta keep moving. Gotta keep bobbing and weaving.
Yeah.
But
you so, actually, okay, so you watched the Jesse Owens movie.
So speaking of Jesse Owens, I figured, okay, we're talking about the 36 Olympics, we're talking about Olympia. I'm going to watch this movie that came out last year called Race. And this is a movie that I never in a million years thought that I would watch because it looked like just really dreary Oscar bait about, you know, a brave black man and a open-minded white man going to Berlin and proving racism wrong and, you know, standing up and all that stuff. And, you know, just it's basically a carbon copy of that movie about 42, that movie about Jackie Robinson that came out like a year before that. And it's just, so I was not looking forward to watching it, but I figured it might be interesting as a companion piece to Olympia. And holy crap, was it ever. So the thing that was really surprising and kind of delightful to watch in this is that, so the main heroes are, of course, Jesse Owens, played by Stephen James, and his track and field coach at Ohio State, played by former SNL cast member Jason Sudeikis. So they have the pretty conventional stories of, you know, conquering discrimination and all that stuff, and it's pretty much what you'd expect. What was a real surprise is that, like, the secondary hero, like the kind of the protagonist who has a arc and a triumph that's parallel to Jesse Owens and complementary and then comes together at the end, Leni Riefenstahl.
Oh my god.
Yes. As played by Carice Van Houten, otherwise known as Melisandre from Game of Thrones. They show her, like, as Jesse Owens is getting ready to do the Olympics, they cut repeatedly to her getting ready to shoot this documentary, and it's all about, at least her scenes, are all about her struggle to, like, overcome the sexism of the other Nazis and, like, Goebbels in order to make the movie that she wants.
Oh, my God. I'm with her.
It's really astounding. Oh, God. It's something. Like, there's a whole scene where she shoots some footage and Goebbels is watching it and he's, like, trying to pretend that he's not impressed with it. And then he's talking to her, and of course, because she's Leni Riefenstahl, she's wearing, like, a men's shirt and jodhpurs or whatever, and Goebbels goes to her, "Do you think you look attractive in that shirt?" And so, like, it sets up at her as, like, oh, yes, well, Jesse Owens is struggling to overcome racism on the field, Leni Riefenstahl is struggling to overcome sexism off the field.
Oh, it was the online harassment of its day.
It was. It's like these Nazi gamer gators didn't want to let Leni Riefenstahl shine.
Oh my god.
But thankfully she was able,
My favorite, I have a few favorite Leni Riefenstahl anecdotes because I think she's a fascinating figure because, you know, like we moralize art so much now. In a way that I think is counterproductive, yet historically we've let actually, like, criminal artists, you know, partake in atrocities. But Leni Riefenstahl didn't have enough extras for a 1940 movie called Lowlands or Tiefland. And so she went to the labor camp at Max Glen and got 51 Roma inmates and used them for extras. And then when she was done, she deported them to Auschwitz.
Look, all right, if you're going to
How did this woman not go to jail?
If you're just going to nitpick a woman's accomplishments, I don't know what to tell you. I mean,
it's insane.
It's like you don't want women to succeed. I'm just sad.
She witnessed mass shootings, mass burials, and at the end of her career, she was just like, "Oh, I misunderstood. I wasn't political." Like, first of all, you were like literally Hitler's favorite person. Like, she would have like these weird like histrionic things where she would be hospitalized for exhaustion, and he would show up personally and bring her flowers and shit. She like witnessed atrocities. She knew exactly what was going on. She wore the fucking uniform. And
God, it's just, you know what, Amber? There's a special place in hell for women who won't support other women, okay? That's all I know.
I know. I'm so anti-feminist right now.
It's disgusting. I'm really disappointed in you right now. But it actually, the movie is kind of a perfect distillation of like the personalized sort of neoliberal ideology of the contemporary sports film, where, like, because there's actually another subplot where people are, and this was based on reality, where people were telling, including the local head of the NAACP, were telling Jesse Owens, don't go to Berlin. People were boycotting it, you know, because it's the fucking Nazis. It was 1936. They'd been in charge for 3 years. And they'd already done a bunch of horrible things. But basically, the tenor of the movie is, well, yeah, if he hadn't gone to Berlin, he wouldn't have been able to have his amazing triumph, which, of course, you know, was a moment of, it's like a station of the cross and like the progression of racial feelings in America. And so he had to do it because it's like his personal triumph was worth more than any kind of, you know, collective action. And Leni Riefenstahl getting to make her movie is like a step forward for women, regardless of the fact that it also helped buttress the Nazi regime.
It's liberal representation.
It's a crystalline example of that.
And then, what did she do to train athletes?
There's actually an interesting story that a number of anti-fascist athletes boycotted the Olympics in 36 and were going to go to an anti-fascist Olympic alternative in Barcelona. And a number of them were actually in the city when the nationalists rose up and tried to seize power in May of 1936. And some of them actually took guns and helped put down the rebellion in the city.
Jesus.
I mean, that's a kind of an interesting story.
Yeah.
But that's the kind of, like, collective action and, like, sacrifice for the idea of, like, principles that would just not register for a contemporary Hollywood movie. And certainly not a contemporary Hollywood movie about sports.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and how did Leni Riefenstahl try to rebrand later and try and, you know, wash that little stink of Nazi off of her? Later in her career, she went and took a bunch of very famous photographs of, I think they were the Nuba.
Were they?
And they're like, yeah.
Were they Maasai? I can't remember. I think they were Maasai tribesmen or something.
They were tribesmen, and first of all, like, the photography itself still has that, like, Riefenstahl, like, weird idealized body thing, where it's just kind of creepy, though, because it's, like, kind of, she poses them, and it very, like, much others their nakedness, and there's all this shit. They're very weird photographs. They look like Vogue photographs. Like, they look like from, like, the 80s, from, like, the late 80s, early 90s, like, they look like, you know, Cindy Crawford would be standing next to them, you know, in, like, an Armani dress or something. Hmm. Like, they look like that very unwoke fashion photography.
United Colors of Benetton.
Where they would just use, like, brown and black people as, like, you know, accessories to the shot. But So, allegedly, one of the people that was, like, following her around and, you know, documenting her documentation of these people or whatever, said, you know, they were filming her, and she, you know, she was so moved at one point that she started weeping, and then she noticed the camera wasn't on, and she snapped up and said, "Turn the camera back on," and then she started weeping again. Like, she's just the, but again, she's like, oh, well, multiculturalism is in now. I'll just be super woke and take some pictures of some black people from far away.
Hmm. Once again, it sounds like you're hating.
Yeah.
That's very disappointing.
Yeah.
Why are you gonna hate on Lenny? She's just trying to make it in a male-dominated field.
Yeah. She didn't make the rules. She's just, you know, she's just trying to get by. She's just trying to make her art.
Yeah, man.
Okay. So, moving forward to a different Nazi. We got this transition right now. Let's talk about the Disney movie, Cool Runnings. It's a very Nazi-heavy episode. So, Cool Runnings, 1993... feel good, multicultural liberal schmaltz based on the 1980 Winter Olympics in Calgary. I watched it with a bunch of Jacker people. I watched it with Neil Meyer, the outreach coordinator, and Chris Maisano, contributing editor. And we forgot to invite, because it was just sort of like last minute, but Remike Forbes, the designer of Jacobin, was actually Jamaican, but we were texting him throughout, and because also we were sort of like, we had all seen this movie as like children, and we were like, I wonder if it's like horribly racist, and we just didn't notice because we were kids. And I was actually pleasantly surprised. It was not bad at all. And Remike had a criticism that the accents were like way off, but like, you know, you've lived in a West Indian neighborhood. I live in a West Indian neighborhood now. Obviously, like, people code switch, but when Jamaicans speak patois to other Jamaicans, it is not easy to understand. It would no longer be.
They would have needed some, if they'd wanted realistic accents with them speaking amongst each other, they would have needed subtitles, no question.
Yeah, it would be a foreign film then. But largely, like, I was kind of impressed by it, and sort of like more actually by the success of it. I mean, it was Disney, but it was a movie, like, primarily centered on, like, four adult black men that, like, actually, like, made $140 million. Like, it had, like, a $14 million budget, and, you know, its box office was, like, $154 million. And it's a weird thing now. I actually kind of can't imagine... I can't think of any other movie like that, and I can't imagine a movie now getting made. It's like, okay, so we're going to make this movie for children, and the leads are going to be John Candy, and four...
Kids love candy. Yeah. Kids go crazy for them.
and like, four adult black men. Like...
Yeah.
I don't think
if they made that movie now, the coach would be like fucking Taylor Lautner or somebody from Twilight, or like... From, like, that short kid from Hunger Games or something.
Oh, totally. And the beginning of it is very much, like, of its time. It, like, the intro, like, it has those, like, do the right thing lettering. Like, that Afrocentric lettering.
That was like, very popular. I think they had that, too, in that other sports movie from that era. The Air Up There with Kevin Bacon. I don't know if you remember that one.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And it had, like, a... good, like, Hans Zimmer soundtrack. There are moments when, like, someone will say, can you imagine a Jamaican bobsled team? And then, like,
oh my god, no way!
and like what almost you talking breaking about? The fourth wall, like, and then like a steel drum plays.
They never like directly looked at the camera or anything, like cross-eyed. Wah, boing.
It came so close. So yeah, I was actually kind of surprised. There are, of course, it is like pure Coca-Cola liberalism, though. Their enemies in this are the East Germans, the bad guys. But they really G-rated their aggression against you know, the Jamaican bobsled team. Like, first of all, if they had been terrible to them, they would not be like, oh, hey, Jamaica. Like, there would just be N-words. Like,
clearly, yeah, something. Yeah.
But also,
I mean, they were European, for God's sake.
Yeah, but also, that's not at all. If anyone would be nice to them, it would be the communists.
It would have
said, they'd be like, we support your struggles against imperialism.
Yes, absolutely. It would have been like, we hope that your country is able one day to triumph over the forces that are arrayed against you from the global hegemon to your north.
Like, how much of it is just that, like some of it I think is obviously red baiting, but how much of it is just that accent sounds scary to us?
Oh, it's so, oh, come on, it's so creepy.
It's just
the
creepy.
German, especially, because remember, the East Germany, a large part of East Germany was Prussia, and the Prussian accent, that's the scariest German accent. Because, like, Bavarian stuff, like, that's like the Schwarzenegger accent. That's like the Werner Herzog. So it's like, you got a mouthful of bratwurst.
Oh, yeah,
but
yeah.
The Prussian accent is, yes, that's the "we have ways of making you talk" accent.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
is
that's
by
so,
far the most menacing one.
So, yeah, I mean, like, there's, like, whatever. They make Rastafarianism references. There are so few Rastafarians in Jamaica, by the way. There are probably more Rastafarians in New York City than there are in Jamaica. Like, it's just, it's incredibly fringe religion.
But are there any weed references? That's what I want to know.
There are no weed references.
Which
I thought was, yeah. There's tons of Coca-Cola in it, too. Like, speaking of Coca-Cola liberalism.
Oh, man, if you got the Coca-Cola, you don't need ganja.
The
it does more for you, man.
I don't think they ever even, like, drink beer in it. Although they are at a bar at a very pivotal scene when they get in a bar fight with the East Germans. And it's Calgary, which is, like, the kind of the Texas of Canada.
Yes,
like,
yes,
like
Alberta,
oil.
Yeah. Tar sands, baby.
Yeah, so they're at this, like, redneck bar. And it's supposed to be kind of fish out of water, but, like, I actually don't think it would be that much because, like, country music is very popular in Jamaica. This is a thing I learned from living here. They love honky-tonk.
Interesting.
Yeah. But, yeah, all this culminates in, like, a bar fight. But they're not, you know, maybe they were drinking a beer. It's also incredibly G-rated. But, like,
so they're, like, at a bar, but they're not even really drinking or anything?
Yeah, there's no insinuation that, like, you got in a bar. Like, people get in bar fights because they get too drunk. People don't get in bar fights because bars make people aggressive, because the setting is aggressive. Like, you get too drunk and then you get aggro. But it's all very gentle.
That couldn't have happened in real life, though, right? They didn't fight one of their other teams.
Okay, well,
I feel like people would have found out
what actually happened.
Yeah, because that sounds highly unlikely.
So the actual, and you can look this up on, I think there's a Business Insider article on it, and I think there's a Daily Beast article on it, about, like, the real Jamaican bobsled team, which I think
real Jamaican bobsled music.
And you know what happened? Dudley Stokes, who was on the team, he went on Reddit and did, like, I think an AMA.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay, so it's completely made up. Everything is made up. Like,
God damn it.
Yeah.
I don't know what to believe in anymore.
Let me just read you this part. I got into bobsledding because I was told to go. I was in the army at the time. The colonel made the suggestion to me, and because I was captain, do as you're told and obey orders. There were two Americans. Two Americans, George Finch and William Maloney, who were big into pushcart racing and thought it translated well to bobsledding. By the way, pushcart racing is boxcart derby stuff, and it's big in Jamaica. Mm-hmm. You mix that with the Jamaican athleticism, and they thought it could work with some of our track athletes. They couldn't get anyone to actually do the sport, so they went to the Army and Colonel, and that's how I became involved in. Once there, I was hooked. So, like, in the movie, they're like, well, they just took a bunch of track athletes, and then, you know, that had Olympic aspirations, but, like, you know, by pure happenstance, like, tripped during the qualifying run. And so they're just like, well, we'll just switch to this sport. You know, they just organically decided. And what do you know? One of the great bobsledding coaches and Olympic gold medal winners just happens to live on the island. And it's John Candy. And he's going to trade him. And he's going to have the pushcart driver, who happens to be the best friend of one of these people that wanted to be in the Olympics. He's going to have him be their fourth man. And it's like, it's just all like, you know, perfect serendipitous.
Yeah.
You know, all this stuff. No, what happened is that two American businessmen kind of, like, bullied the Jamaican army into, like, taking people, like, out of the, I mean, you know, well, recruiting people or whatever. But, I mean, come on. They said, like, do as you're told.
Was like, yeah, what? I mean, you're in the army, yeah. You don't have a lot of options.
Yeah. And so, like, obviously, like, I we all love a training montage.
They have an excellent
training montage. But, like, they trained pretty extensively in, like, Austria and, like, upstate New York. They didn't, like, they weren't, like, doing it in like, you know, they got to be on ice. They made it seem like they had no way of being on ice until they got to the Olympics. Also, like, the way they sort of portrayed the sport is very wrong. They, like, made a lot of jokes like, oh, they can't walk on ice. But, like, you have spikes on your shoes.
Yeah, you know, right.
Yeah, they're like a cleat or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, actually. it's actually, like, this very skeezy. And also, you know, by their own account, they're like, we were treated incredibly well by the other athletes. Like, there was, like, a feeling of camaraderie. Everyone was kind to them. Now, what actually did happen is that you know, they had this crash, and they did actually cross the finish line. They did not hold it above their heads the way they did in the Disney movie, but they, like, stood up and, like, pushed the bobsled across the finish line. They used actual crash footage, too, from the, you know, from the Olympics.
See, that's good. More sports movies should be willing to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
To, because just, like, if you have the actual footage, just use it.
Yeah.
Your goofy reenactment does not give it anything that it wouldn't otherwise have.
Yeah. And also, like, pushing over the finish line, like, that's still pretty moving. Holding it above the head just looks insane, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you doing? That's too much. Well, more, the question I have is, realism question I have is, when they were doing this, did the crowd go,
the slow clap? But in the best, like, way possible, in the most Coca-Cola liberalism way possible, like, who started the slow clap? The East Germans.
Of course.
Because then they respected them. Because
And guess what happened, like, a year later? Wall came down?
Yep.
Boom.
Yep.
QED.
Those things aren't unrelated.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So, yeah, and also, like, it is a terrifying crash. They, like, lost control of it at, like, they're going, like, 85 miles per hour.
Yeah, it's, like, insane. The ones that go down the track, all those Winter Olympic sports are insane.
Yeah, those people are nuts. It looks, when you look at it, you're like, oh, this looks fun as hell. Like, it looks like a roller coaster on ice. But then you're like, oh, yeah. But, like, you can, like, break every bone in your body and die under the weight of this metal. It's almost, to be honest, kind of irresponsible.
Yeah.
That
what are you people doing?
Like, oh, we're just going to throw some Jamaican lyrics. It'll be novel. People will love it. You know, this Jamaicans, they're so naturally athletic.
Yeah.
two Americans. There was no John Candy. There is none of that. But it's a sweet movie, and for all its kind of liberal bullshit, it's kind of well made. And it's like a decent movie, you know? It's just a palace of lies.
Well, I just can't wait for the inevitable remake starring Usain Bolt. That seems that's got to happen, right? It's like, because he's going to be finishing with his career, probably. This is his last Olympics, most likely. Most successful track athlete, basically, ever.
Yeah.
It's like, and very charismatic. And it's like, what do we do with this guy? Fastest man in the world. What do we do with this guy? Some brain dead idiot, after, you know, hoovering up an entire, you know, day's worth of coke at a movie studio. You know, they looked at that footage of him, like, getting interviewed after he won again, and it's like, cool runnings. Do it. Bring it. That's it. We don't have to fake the accent. He could do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kills.
So that seems like that's going to happen.
Was incredibly successful.
Yeah. It's like, and that's it. Like, they're always desperate. You know, it's like, oh, what do people recognize? Oh, people have good associations with that movie. They love Usain Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
That's a guaranteed box office hit. Let's make it happen. We're talking about it. It's already being talked about it.
Oh,
those
totally.
Papers are being signed. I guarantee you that's going to happen.
He hasn't had any scandals or anything. They could still keep it G-rated.
Yep.
Or at least like a cartoon or something.
Something. They're going to have to. They got to do something with him because he's not American, and that's really the issue. But like, that's why something like that would work, because then you can sort of familiarize his foreignness to American audiences. It's like, hey, you guys remember these Jamaicans, right, that you enjoyed so much? Well, here's another one.
I gotta say, I think Cool Runnings sounds like it's so much less offensive than the Jesse Owens movie.
Well, I mean, it does not have any parts where it takes a leading Nazi propagandist and makes her sort of like Melanie Griffith in Working Girl. So I'm going to go with, yeah, it's way less offensive than the Jesse Owens movie. It's pretty
so
astounding.
Weird. I went into it thinking like, oh, they're going to make like these like cartoonish. And I knew, actually, I had researched ahead of time that it like the story was bullshit. But I mean, I'm definitely one of those people that doesn't. It's not that I don't fault biographical movies for taking liberties or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I just have also a secondary sort of consideration for them, where it's just like, this is not a good biography. But, you know, for a fucking Disney movie for kids, it's fine. It's completely fine. It's an acceptable piece of children's entertainment, you know, made in the legacy of a man who hit Nazis.
Ah, yeah. Well, so we've discovered today that of the movies we talked about, the one that's the most insidious and problematic piece of propaganda is the feel-good Jesse Owens wins the race movie.
Absolutely.
Followed by the actual Nazi propaganda. With
and
Cool
then,
Runnings,
yeah.
The Disney film, well in the rear.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the gold. Gold for Race, silver for Olympia, and bronze for Cool Runnings in the
cool
vile
runnings.
Propaganda event.
Cool Runnings that only really manages to, red bait and not and be a Disney movie. Like, that's...
Yeah.
There's only, you know, it's just... Bourgeois entertainment,
yeah.
Like it's,
relatively low on the crime cinematic crime scale, yeah.
Yeah.
Better, okay. Certainly better than whitewashing a Nazi propagandist.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Well, we covered our three.
Yeah, we did it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty good for two people who we don't watch the sports ball.
Not really. Ugh, sports ball. Give me a break.
We read books. Maybe you've heard of them.
Well, I mean, blog posts, but that's close enough. So, yes, I give us...
comment section.
I give us both gold medals for open-mindedness and insights. So, hooray.
All right. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Absolutely. See you guys next week. Bye.
And now for the final. The six fastest sprinters of the world are getting ready. Borschmeyer, Germany. Wyckoff, America. Owens. Strandberg of Sweden. Ozendorf of Holland. And Metcalf of America. Comes up, but Owens wins in 10.3. Second, Metcalf America. Third, Ozendorf Holland.